and welcome to another episode of Downtime with Cranston Public Library. We're a podcast for cool people who love libraries, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been loving. I'm your host, Taylor. I'm the branch librarian at the Oaklawn Branch Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
Hello, I'm Sean Michael Colone. I'm a director of documentaries. I'm working on one about podcasts, and my pronouns are he, him.
Thank you for joining me. A little bit later in the show, we will talk about your upcoming documentary project, Age of Audio, all about podcasts. But before we get into that, let's start off as we always do with what have you been reading?
Oh, gosh, I wish I had been reading more things. I've been doing a lot of reading of transcripts of interviews that I've been doing. I'm trying to think of the last thing that I read. It's been a while.
Well, you talked about that you enjoyed audiobooks before we kind of got started with the call. So if you have some audiobooks at top of mind, we're happy to hear about that too.
You know what's funny? I'm trying to see if I have my history on my Audible here so I could see the last things that I've downloaded. Okay, so it's been a little bit since I've read this, but it's a book that I talk to people about a lot, which is Sapiens, if you're familiar. Harari is the author, and that I call my confirmation bias book. It was the first time that I got it. I talked about people so much. I got invited to a book club one time to talk about it.
Wow.
Where I was like, whoa, that's a, you know. It comes up in conversation quite a bit, I think, because it covers a lot of ground. Those who aren't familiar, it's a brief history of humankind. And the author is a historian, but kind of weaves a lot of different ideas. It can be debated about the validity of those ideas and all those kind of things. But for me, it really, as I was reading it, solidified a lot of ideas that I had thought about or things that I had just thought, you know, and like, oh, so someone else thought this too. Someone way smarter than me, and then put it together in an entire book in a context. And one of the main reasons I started reading it is because of the ideas of intersectional myth that it talks about, like, you know, currency or storytelling, where everything is stories all the way down, and it really kind of dives into storytelling. So I was interested. Someone suggested I read it. From that angle, but then it so many other things. So, and then his whole series of books in that vein are the books that I talk about the most, I would say. So I'm going to go with that as an answer.
That's great. And I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but there has been a graphic novel adaptation of that book. I think they had to break it into two parts. And that has been on my reading list for forever. I love graphic novels to begin with, but I am especially passionate about graphic nonfiction. I think it's an amazing way to teach people. And as someone who is not a big, like, prose nonfiction reader, I've been trying to do more of it this year. But, like, the idea of reading, like, a text written by a historian is, like, very daunting to me.
Oh, gosh. Here's what I'll say. It's, like, super entertaining. I read it three times.
Wow.
Like, you know, listen to it, read it, you know, that, right. That kind of thing. But yeah. It's done in such a way. Well, for me, it was just, I mean, like I said, it was like, what? So I'm not a crazy person. Someone else has thought about these guys. Cause I tend to be pretty pragmatic. A lot of people, I think one of the interesting takeaways from that book was that capitalism has a lot of, you know, downsides. It has quite a bit of upside. And that's why it remains so dominant. And, you know, it's like, and even the historical fact of how the British took Hong Kong and just how that worked. It's so crazy. How there's so many things that tie into that. And like even the idea, like I was going to get shirts made. I still might, that says, domesticated by wheat.
Yeah.
And if you read the book, there's other historians that have talked about this, but the idea that we were hunter gatherer and then that wheat was the kind of thing that kind of stopped us from doing that. And from that you get, you know, agrarian culture, and then you have caste systems where someone owns the land, someone has to work the land. And prior, it was much more egalitarian, I think. And from what we understand. So it's kind of one of those, it's like things you think about all the time. Like, but as far as the getting conversations with capitalism, I'm like, yeah, capitalism, it sucks. But it also like does this thing where it integrates all the other kind of systems into itself to maintain itself. Anyway, sorry, I see what happens. This is what happens.
Nope. It makes me want to prioritize checking out the graphic novel adaptation even more now.
Oh, I think it's it covers so many bases. And the fact that he's like a vegetarian, like the author is a vegetarian. And he clearly talks about, you know, the fact that capitalism only works on the backs of billions of animals being slaughtered. I mean, it's the only way it works. You have to feed that many people. And that's where you get factory farming and all these things. They have to be able to produce that much to sustain that level. Because once kind of capitalism took over, capital kind of usurped all the royalty. Because it used to be, you know, royalty. The only way you could get into this is if your father owned the land or, you know, family owned the land. And once capitalism came into play and corporations, which is just a story. A corporation is a story. It's not a thing that actually exists. It's a thing. And that's why the book is so great, because he talks about it. He's like, what's a corporation? Is it the assets and the people? Is it the IP? What is it? No, it's a story. It's what we say about this thing. And it once that story was a stronger story than royalty, and it eventually usurped all the royalty in the world. Capital took over, and it was just that idea. It's a story. What is a corporation? You know, and you know, in our politics, you know, corporations are people, and you know, they can own property, and they can do things. You know, and you get into all these metaphysical things about like it's like a person without a soul or a conscience. So yeah. It's like almost scary in a lot of ways. So anyway, see all these things, the things that I bing bong in my head. Yeah, I highly recommend it. And I actually own a copy of the graphic novel. It was really great because it like you can see all the different things that they're talking about. So yeah, that was okay. I'm feeling pretty confident now. That was, I think, a pretty good answer.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, on a somewhat unrelated note, because I can't really think of a real strong connection between and what I've been reading. I mean, I guess this book features maybe some more agrarian, like pre-colonization and pre-industrializing society. Mm-hmm. Called A Benny Song. It's ABENI'S song. So I hope I'm saying that right. That's how I've been reading it in my head. And I'm not too far in, but it's, like I said, like agrarian, African village-coded society. Like, it's unclear the time period. Mm-hmm. It's about this girl, Abeni, and these kind of, like, evil magical forces, which we don't, like I said, at the point that I'm at, don't know much about right now, came in and destroyed her village. They, like, played this song, and it, all the children, like they stole all the children, and we're not sure why.
It's like a Pied Piper kind of story.
Yeah, like it definitely has like those vibes. And she's saved by this woman. She lives like outside of society, and everyone says that she's a witch. Don't know what they want with these children, and not sure, at least at this point, what's going to happen to Abeni, but I'm interested to see how it goes. And I'm happy to finally be reading some middle grade, because I feel like I've kind of been neglecting that as someone who works a lot with children as part of my job. I feel like I'm not super familiar with like different middle grade titles. So I'm glad to have one that I'll be able to maybe talk to some kids about. But so besides reading, have you been watching anything lately?
So yeah, I tend to watch things. Me and my wife, what we'll do is usually one or two shows, because I don't watch too much TV because I'm usually working on stuff at some capacity or getting distracted by my phone. That's really, that actually does happen, which I'd rather be watching things. But last year, Blue Eye Samurai on Netflix came out, and it is just incredible. the storytelling. It's like feudal Japan stuff. Like, this is during the time where, like, they had no white people were allowed in. Like, no one else was allowed in Japan. It was just, like, they had kicked everyone out. And, you know, somebody had slept with a white guy, and there was a child that had blue eyes. And, like, it's a she, but women weren't allowed to learn the ways of the sword. So, like, she codes as a male, you know, and but is, like, bent on revenge. And the way the story gets told is amazing. The action is incredible. The when we put it on, a lot of times, me and my wife watch different anime stuff sometimes, in the collection of things we watch. And usually what we'll do is, if it's anime, we'll put on the subtitles. And so we went to do that in this, and I was like, there wasn't any, because it was American made and there aren't Japanese subtitles. It's fully American show. Has a lot of, like, really great Asian actors in it, like pretty famous ones. But the animation is incredible. It's like a mixture of, like, 3D animation and drawn. It's like, it's like incredible. And it can be incredibly violent, and there are sexy parts.
Okay.
Cause there's, like, geishas and, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, but, and it gets pretty graphic. Not all the time, not excessively, but it does go there sometimes. So I should warn anyone who's watching, it's not for kids. But it is, wow. I think there's going to be a season two, which I think they just announced earlier this year that there's going to be season two. So excited about that. I highly recommend it. I'm not the only person. There was on a lot of top 10 lists last year. So that's really good. There's a show that me and my wife have been watching. We haven't finished it, but it's on Netflix. This other one's on Max. And it's called Scavenger's Reign. It's also an animated show. It's the future, and there's some cargo kind of transport ship that crashes on this alien planet. And apparently the people who wrote it were botanists and biologists. So all the creatures and the way they operate is, like, it's like nothing else you see. It's like it's so detached from normal animals and the way they operate and what they can do and the whole thing. So, but also the soundtrack and the mood, it can be kind of violent on this planet, but me and my wife talk about it, like, it puts you in a weird headspace mood. Like, it has like a it's like in a good way, like a very, like, it has like a whole vibe to it, probably the best way to describe it. And it's almost like calming, but there's a lot of things happening in the show. The animation's pretty cool, and so that's another one that we've been watching. And we're all up on the Marvel stuff as well. So any Marvel stuff we've seen multiple times and all that kind of stuff. But those two shows are ones that Scavenger's Reign we haven't finished, but it's really cool.
That sounds really cool. You saying about Marvel made me think of it. I did watch The Marvels now that it's on Disney Plus, which there was part of me that felt like, because I never ended up finishing Ms. Marvel, and I didn't end up even watching Secret Invasion. And there was part of me that felt like, maybe I should have done that before I watched this movie.
No, Secret Invasion, you can apparently totally forget about.
Oh, okay.
And they really dropped the ball on that one. I'm a big Marvel fan, and I'm usually, like, a very positive Marvel person and want to give everything. I like almost everything. That squandered a lot of, like, ideas. And it doesn't even tie into anything really. And in fact, Samuel Jackson, like, the character he's playing on Secret Invasion, even though they're technically the same character, like, it's incongruent. But Ms. Marvel, you need to finish that.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
Ms. Marvel, she's awesome. I really like her. And that show, I've watched, like, that series I've watched through a couple times. Did you watch Echo?
I did watch Echo. And yeah. I think I was a little disappointed by the ending of Echo. I felt like it was one of those things that, I don't know, it felt a little rushed to me.
They did. They rushed it. It was supposed to be 8 episodes, and I think they squished it down to 5.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Because her friend, so I don't know if you watched Reservation Dogs. Did you ever see that?
I did not, but I've got, I know. It's been like a multi-time recommended on the podcast. Like so many people have come and talked about it. Okay. I know.
Put that at the very top of your list.
Yeah.
There's three seasons. I'm so jealous of you.
That I get to watch Red Sox for the first time.
You get to watch Red Sox for the first time. I mean, Sterling Harjo, just an amazing filmmaker and storyteller. I mean, some of the episodes are like little short films, like independent films, the way they're shot. Because some of them are really funny, but some of them are so poignant. And you fall in love with those characters. And the reason I mention that is because my joke when we were watching Echo to my wife, because like there's quite a few people that like one reservation dog is shot like up in Oklahoma. So it's like some of the even like those drone shots or whatever when they're in Echo are very similar to shots that they would do, you know, just because it's the standard stuff you show in the States.
Yeah.
And so I was like, no, this is Red Dog season 4. The woman who plays Alana plays Bonnie. I think her name's Bonnie in the Echo show. She was the friend.
Oh,
or the friend that she didn't talk to when she got there.
The cousin who, yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They like, she shows up for like half a second and then it's supposed to have like this big emotional thing. And she's only there for like 2 seconds. Like, I think there was a lot more of with Bonnie and their reconciliation and all that kind of stuff. I liked it overall. I thought they were doing some cool stuff. How do you feel about the Marvel stuff? Too much Marvel? Was there too much Marvel, you think?
I was a big Marvel, and I still am, but I think I've leaned off the accelerator a little bit. But I was a big Marvel fan, you know, leading up to the whole Endgame thing, and and I thought the way, you know, like every movie wasn't great, but overall the way it was executed and the payoff for this like really long breadcrumb arc, like I really enjoyed it. And some of the one-offs are like some of my favorite. Like Black Panther is amazing. Like the first Black Panther is like amazingly done. I think like great rewatchability. Like I'm never bored watching it again.
Yeah.
And I think a really good and poignant message about like, how do you move forward and heal from the effects of like colonialism and systemized racism?
Right.
Like there are two paths and you can like decide that, oh, we're going to just flip it. We just flip the power and we'll take the power now. Or you can like decide that you need to work within the system that already exists. And
right.
But I think since the ending of Phase 3, I feel like they've really kind of just like been floundering and because they had direction. You know what I mean? They had direction that it was all building up to Thanos. And now it's like, what are we building towards?
And I will also say there were a lot of stinkers along the way to Thanos, you know.
That's fair.
But Endgame, the brilliance of like Endgame is that they were able to kind of retroactively make even the ones that were not considered the best ones and give them more context. So when you watch those, it somehow makes elevated them a little bit. So I guess I'm a little bit of a fanboy, but I feel like what they did is they took all that goodwill and they tried stuff outside of the box, and some of them did not work. And I also feel like there's always corporate influence things that happen with companies. And I feel like sometimes they, like we were talking about Secret Wars, they removed, it was the writer who had been writing it from the beginning when they started it. He was the guy who did, what's that show with Malik, the Mr. Robot.
Oh, right. Yep.
Which is well written, like, you know, it's like good at building tensions. You know, they took him off of that. And who's to say that would have been better or worse, but what it did is it made the Secret Wars feel uneven and there wasn't like a, you know, but I do think like what they did with WandaVision and the exploration of grief was really excellent.
Yeah.
That first season of Loki. I don't know if it was the perfect show, but Moon Knight was really good.
I enjoyed Moon Knight, but there is part of me, and it's something that I realized based on, we recently recorded an episode where one of my coworkers said, she was like, I love when a book gaslights me. And yeah. She meant like she loves it when you don't know what's real. And I figured out recently that I don't like it when that's in a narrative.
Oh.
So like, or it really needs to be tempered.
Right.
So like the ending of Moon Knight and feeling like you're like, what of what we just watched was like genuinely happened in the narrative?
Right.
Like that is a little weird for me.
That's fair. But I also think it was one of those things that you didn't have to know anything about anything else in Marvel to watch that show.
No, that's true. I felt that way, like, about She-Hulk too, for the most part.
She-Hulk was, I think She-Hulk, aside from some of the graphic stuff not being that great, which I can totally forgive, I thought that was one of the most inventive. I just did a rewatch of that recently, and like, they were having so much fun making that show. But once again, they did that thing where they kicked off Jessica Gao. She was like one of the creators of it, and then she got kind of wrote it and then got sidelined, as far as I understand, you know, from what I've read. She kind of got sidelined, and it's one of those things where it's another one of those things that looked like it got messed with, you know, by it's kind of like Echo, like it got messed with. They're like, no, you got to make this work within these new constraints. And the thing that's, I'm excited about Marvel is I feel like they got the message
of like what people want and what people don't want.
Well, and don't make a bunch of stuff. Stop, pull back.
That's fair. Yeah.
Like don't make four movies a year, make one really good movie a year, or maybe two. You know, there's only so many people that can create at that level.
Yeah.
And what they did is, as far as I can tell, and other people have said this much smarter than me, but it seems like they kind of took their talent and spread it thinner out. Mm-hmm. You know, with having that many shows going at one time and having that many movies going at one time and then still trying to interconnect. And also, I would kind of like the Marvels. I thought the Marvels was a really good movie. I thought it was excellent. I don't think it deserved any of the hate that it got on it at all. I thought it was upper mid-tier Marvel. It was super cool, super fun. Things you've never seen before. I always love when a movie does something you've never seen before. You've never seen people get rescued by being eaten by cats.
Yeah.
Like, it's just never happened. True. That's never been on a screen before. You know, like that thing. When you saw that scene. And even the you know, some people maybe not have liked the musical stuff, but I think that's, once again, that's someone trying something.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not the execution is perfect, they were trying something that you hadn't seen before. I also think it's amazing we get any of these. It's the fact that they exist is actually pretty crazy. And the fact that it went that long, you can't. It's like an embarrassment of riches, right? It's like, oh, there's too many Marvel shows. It's so terrible. Did you see the Deadpool Wolverine trailer?
Okay, I'm kind of mad that they just put the teaser in the Super Bowl, but they're like, we're not going to actually show you the trailer. Why not?
Because it's $7 million for 30 seconds.
That's true, right. It's very expensive. I thought of it after I said it out loud.
They're like, we could spend $7 million on this 30-second teaser, or we can spend $28 to $30 million on the 2.5-minute trailer.
That's fair. Okay. Yeah. But like after that, then like, you know, I watched the rest of the Super Bowl.
See, what happened is you gotten too good at being off your phone.
I was trying to be too present during the Super Bowl.
Right. No, they're not counting on that. They're counting on you being absolutely not present at all.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. They're like, everyone will be on their phones anyway. Yeah. They're like, not me. I'm trying not to be on my phone.
This is quality time with my partner who enjoys football, and I'm trying to figure out why.
Because it's a good story sometimes. That's why.
No, that is the thing that has kind of gotten me on board with it and why I've been more willing to watch football with him. He showed me, he had it all on DVD of, he's a Giants fan, and he showed me the year that they won the Super Bowl against the Patriots.
I have a story about this.
You have the story? A story about that?
I have
that
a story
Super Bowl?
About this specifically. Uh-huh. I can't believe you brought up that specific game. I was about to tell you this story. So I have always been a fan of Futurama, right? Futurama, show Futurama. Yep. And was aging myself. Back in the day, when I had to work, I would have a VHS and I would have it run and tape the Futurama episodes for me.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing would bum me out more is when I got home to watch Futurama and the football game had gone long and got cut into the episode. And I used to like loathe football. And I would hear, like, here in Texas, people talk about football, right? And so it'd be in like social situations, be like, hey, man, you like football? And I'm like, no, football. I'm sorry. Sorry.
He'll beep it. Dave loves to beep.
Okay.
It's fine. Keep going.
Like, football stinks, you know? And it just, people would shut down. They're trying to have a conversation with you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and my buddies like football. So like one year I was like, okay, I want to know about this. So I was like, I went to some of the games and watched at home with them for a while and did like a season, not the entire season, but like a good chunk of it. And the Cowboys lost, as they tend to do. But I stayed going, and it was the Giants, like that. And I was born in New York. I have no particular tie to the Giants, but like I was born in New York. They were, and I knew the Patriots had been winning over and over and over again. Like, boring. And they also had like the Inflategate and all the little controversies. Like, I was like, these guys are already really good and they're cheating. Ugh, don't like these guys. You know, it's like, and after you've won like 4 or 5 years in a row, like, what? Who cares? You know, at that point. So we're following the game, and the Giants get into the Super Bowl, and it's the first Super Bowl I've ever cared about, even a little bit. Like every other time, like I don't even care about this stupid game. Like, so Super Bowl comes up, and I think as Eli Manning goes to shake the hand of Tom Brady from the Patriots, and Tom Brady snubs him. He pulls his arm back, and I'm like, so invested in the game at this point. I'm like, they better beat these guys. Like, so every play I was like, oh, you know, like up, popcorn flying, you know, the whole thing, you know, like, ah, oh, like, but I was so invested in the story of this guy who's like the cool team that always wins. You know, it's like typical like nerd story. And like, it's the up and comer, the Giants. And, you know, he's the guy who's trying to be cool. And, you know, like, you got to the Super Bowl. How could you not have mutual professional respect? Right. So, yeah. So like the Giants win that. And I had like the best Super Bowl experience. So that after that, I'm like, I'm completely done with football because like, I'm never going to have that good of an experience, you know, but it was kind of tie back what you're saying is like, it was that story. It was that,
yeah,
the narrative behind what was going on that got me so invested. And after that point, now I can have conversations with people about football, you know, briefly, and kind of maybe steer the conversation to an area that's more my area. But yeah, so I did the same thing. I learned because I wanted to know, you know, like, and it has economic impact. It's a big thing that way more people indulge in than what I like, you know? So it's like, I think it's a good thing to be curious, but like I said, I'll never really care about a Super Bowl again because there's just almost no way that I would ever have a Super Bowl experience that would top that.
Yeah, like this come up narrative about the Giants. Like Eli Manning had a very touch and go season that whole season.
Oh my gosh,
and it was kind of like, yeah,
totally talking about football right now. Like it's a sports podcast.
Yes.
This is amazing. You're like, you're talking about the season and the playoffs.
My family would be shocked.
It sounds like we know about sports. It's so funny.
I know. It's wild. But yeah, but I kind of have had a similar experience now where, yeah, like I don't need to shut down that conversation when people are talking about football because I do actually have, even if it's like my handful of talking point, like, well, this year and last year, because of the 49ers won both times, Steve Spagnuolo, who is the defensive coordinator for the 49ers, used to be the defensive coordinator for the Giants the year that they won that Super Bowl with the Patriots. But like then it was a long time of him like, oh, like not win and never really being able to succeed being a head coach anywhere. It was like a whole thing. He kind of got snubbed.
Interesting. Another deep drama there.
Yeah. So it's a thing that both years it's like, well, Steve Spagnuolo deserved.
Oh, right, good. Dude, this is officially a sports podcast. You're like, not only we know names of players, but you know the defensive coordinator's name.
I think I got it right. He might be the offensive coordinator, but I'm not sure. But being in a similar situation, it is kind of nice to, yeah, to not have to be like, oh, I don't know anything about football.
I think it shows that you have put in some kind of effort.
Yeah.
You care about your significant other, you know, so you're curious, not as an initial thing, but you're like, they love it. So I should know something about it. You know what I mean? Not that you're necessarily going to be the like lead person saying, we got to watch the game.
Yeah.
But you're going to be like, hey, you want to watch the game? Yeah, we could do that. And once you recognize
I finally understand what downs mean. It only took like 27 years of my life.
Yeah, no,
I cheered for 3 years, learned nothing about the rules of football. I just did what they told us. Our coach would be like, do this cheer now because this thing is happening. And we'd be like, okay, coach, we'll do. Yeah.
We talked about football for like 20 minutes. That's so funny.
We did.
But we talked about Marvel first, so that's nerd true. Cred there.
So yes, I won't lose my nerd card. And we'll return to the show after a quick break. The path to smart purchasing decisions starts at your library with consumerreports.org. Available to Cranston Public Library cardholders, consumerreports.org is one of the most trusted sources for information and advice on consumer products and services, with ratings and recommendations on cars, appliances, electronics, and thousands of other products. Get started at cranstonlibrary.org/databases. Do you enjoy knitting or crocheting? Cranston Public Library offers two groups that you can join to meet other crafters. Auburn's Knit and Crochet Crafters meet Mondays from 2 to 4 p.m. The William Hall Library's Knit and Crochet Drop-In meets Wednesdays from 12:30 to 2 p.m. You can also become a blanketeer and create blankets for children in need. For more information, visit cranstonlibrary.org/events. I do want us to spend some time talking about your upcoming documentary, Age of Audio. So,
do we have to talk about that?
I mean, I would like to.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
So, could you tell our listeners a little bit about what the documentary is about and the idea behind it?
Sure. And like, there's some information out there right now. So you can go to aoamovie.com if you want to kind of look up who's in the movie, and I'm not going to do an exhaustive list, but the movie at its core is about the tension between art and commerce, as told through the podcast industry. And the corner that we're focused in on is the narrative driven, like audio documentary side, like This American Life, Radio Lab, you know, those type of podcasts. It's not exclusively, but that's where a lot of the focus is on that part of the industry. And it dives into a little bit of the history of the medium. It makes it, if I do my job right, it makes a case for the medium as an art form. It's, as I would say, it's a podcast is a medium, not a genre. And explores some of the power of audio storytelling, one of the oldest forms of storytelling that exists. And through podcasts, quote unquote, that's kind of the medium in which we most, I think, take on or listen to or absorb audio storytelling at this point. That's the biggest. And that was, you know, at the beginning, it was the only only way that we did that. So it kind of tells a little bit of the story of where Serial came from and This American Life and, its, importance in the catapulting podcasts or into the zeitgeist, for better or for worse, depending on how you think you see it. It definitely, kind of documents the podcast boom and subsequent, I guess, implosion or pullback and the consequences of that boom of when a lot of money went into the medium. So it pulls back the curtain a little bit on what goes into some of these podcasts, especially narrative driven ones. And like I said, it because of the different areas we focus in on and some of the corporate money coming in and what it means to be an independent podcaster or an independent creator, if that makes sense. It dives into the like I said, the tensions between what it takes to make these things and the people who make them and, there's some people getting $100 million deals and there's other people that are making, you know, these podcasts for next to nothing or just doing it cause it's a passion, that they love and they want to connect with people. And it's one of the few mediums that anyone can do. Because of the so we dive into a little bit of the technology side of as well, the RSS of it all, and more so than just the technology, but what the technology allowed to happen. So we talk a little bit about Apple and the iPhone and kind of the consequences of the the when art and technology come together, what like how that affects the art form. So it's about, it's called Age of Audio, and it's really about like audio storytelling and podcasting as a medium of such.
And so it's still an ongoing project. You're in the middle of working on it now.
Close to being done.
Okay.
We are very close. We actually hasn't been officially announced yet, but because we haven't, we're still, you know, dotting the I's on the contracts, but we have found a company that's going to co-produce and is going to put up the money to finish the movie. And we're trying to have it finished relatively quickly, like in order of months, if that makes sense. I don't know if it'll be out this year, but if things go according to the schedule that we have, it should be done by before the end of the year. And we've been working on it for 6 years. So 2018 is when we first started filming something. And 2019 is when we really in earnest did a lot of interviews, which is kind of the beginning of that podcast boom.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're very excited. Like I said, you can go to AOA Movie and you can see the list of people that are in the movie and some brief synopsis and some screenshots of some of the cinematography from the movie. We're going to be doing a few more things at the end of the month, some filming. About 90% of the filming is done with the movie, and we've been in an edit situation for, you know, a couple years now. And really waiting on money. Money's the hard thing with any major artistic endeavor, which is, you know, it's an interesting reflection on, it's like I'm currently feeling the tension between art and commerce. And living the tension. You know, every movie's about yourself, the person who makes it. But it's definitely not about me directly, but indirectly, as someone who creates things. I'm not making podcasts, but, yet, but it's any kind of an artistic endeavor, you know, as money comes into it, it changes it, you know, it expands who can reach it. It expands who can do it. But it also changes it. It's one of those things that is inevitable. And as we were talking about corporations earlier, how, you know, they are soulless things. But the movie's not like a condemnation of that money coming mm-hmm. in. It speaks to what some of the consequences and impact, maybe impact's a better word. There's an impact in the sense that it broadened how many people. It made the pie much bigger, that money coming in. And these big celebrities that come in with these $100 million deals, like it feels so inequitable, but they are also bringing people into the medium that may like discover other things that are not, you know, that down that line. So it's not a cut and dry. It's like most things. It's pretty gray. What's the good and bad, the pros and cons of it. Kind of like we were talking about with capitalism, we're like, oh yes, a lot of really gross things that happen in capitalism, but also it can solve these, you know, world ending problems, you know, because it concentrates effort on its own survival. That capitalism wants to survive. So, it ties into a lot of those kind of different things, but it's going to be a lot of fun. So I hope it's not going to come off as like this serious endeavor. Cause there's a lot of like poop jokes.
okay.
It'll make sense when you get there.
Okay. But so you talked about that it's been a long process for you to put the documentary together, and you said kind of when you started filming was the height of this boom in podcasting, and that now we're kind of seeing the downturn from that. So had that changed anything about the film and about the direction that you wanted to go in, like watching things change as you're trying to make the movie?
I mean, there's, you know, you make any documentary, but life is happening. It's going to continue to happen. So there's got to be an end point. But really, I don't think so. Because I think one of the things is, I mean, we have more information about what happens when the money goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But the impact is still there. That boom, right. Even though it has ended, there were negative effects of when there was a lot of money. And there's also some negative effects that happen when all these companies realize, oh, there's no money here. This isn't going to make us $1 billion. It's only going to make us a few hundred million. you know, and they say, oh, this isn't worth it. And they start pulling back and then people start losing their jobs. But it was inflated to begin with. And this, I think in almost any art form, this type of thing happens. You know, there's this like time in the 90s where all this money was coming in and you talk to any independent filmmaker, oh, it's really hard to do it now. Yeah, yeah. There's this time where the money comes in, like, you know, capital sees opportunity. It fires a cannon of money at it. And like I said, this isn't just podcasting. There's a lot of different, you know, startups or this thing with capital rushes into an area because it's all controlled by humans and humans where we're, you know, that type of thing, like, there's a crowd swell that happens. And so that money rushes into a particular area. It creates a lot of stars. It creates a lot of like, well, people make a lot of money off it. Some people who should not have gotten money got money. The people who should have gotten money didn't get any money, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, once that fad changes or you know, capital wants to find risk, so it takes the risk on these things. And when it once it the numbers flesh out and think, oh, this really isn't going to make any money, they pull that money out and they put it someplace else. And there are consequences to that. And I feel like the movie, even though we had really stopped filming a year and a half ago, the entire industry shifted because that pullback did happen. Now we're going to be doing some of the filming we're doing is to talk to some people about that side of it. But I think it's just different sides of the same coin. It's the consequences or impact of that boom, which the pullback from that boom is also a consequence. But also what happens is capital is looking, especially that early capital, a lot of that money came in, it's looking for 10x. It's looking for a massive amount of growth. And it's focused on growth, not sustainability. And I think the one thing about podcasting, and we talked to like Tom Webster and the people who do a lot of the research on the numbers side of it, is podcasting has never really had a boom. I mean, there was the boom of capital that came in. Mm-hmm. But if you look at listenership and all these kind of things, there hasn't really been the hockey puck. I mean, hockey stick. Hockey puck is round. Hockey stick is up the curve. And it's been on this slow, steady growth for the past 15, you know, 18 years. Just kind of going like this. And I think it's landing right back where it was, where it's going to continue to grow. You know, it's what's happening now, and we'll talk to people about and hopefully end the movie on a hopeful note, that it's kind of going back to where it was. And since that money came in and people have seen what it can do and see, you know, the ways that it can be done wrong, there were also experiments that happened during that time that played out. And some people say, hey, well, if this company probably would have done well if they weren't so focused on the massive growth, if they would have just looked at being sustainable. How do we sustain 5 podcasts, not do 25?
Yeah.
Let's do 5 ones that we can sustain rather than shoot up and do, you know, 15, 20 and have to cancel half of those because they're not sustainable, because that kind of growth isn't sustainable. There's not. You have to build audience. You can't just build shows. You know, like you can build, you know, 10,000 shows, but if there's not enough people to watch all those things and that audience hasn't built up yet. But so, yeah, I think it long, long answer to your question. It did change a little bit, but not dramatically, because that it's still that impact of what it meant when the consolidation and capital went into the space. And I think that the story that's happening right now is still a continuation of that same thing. And, you know, the boom happened, if that makes sense. So we can talk about the boom and then talk about what happens. But it always has happened, if that makes sense at this point.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, where we end is where we end, because time's up, you know, on making the movie. It's got to be finished. So, like, as long as we're still, you know, I would say this last trip we're doing at the end of the month, most likely, barring some kind of big celebrity that wants to be a part of the movie or something like that, that we're going to be doing any kind of filming, because we'll be able to put a little cap on that and talk to some of the people that are moving the sustainable route. And the name of my company is Open Ended Films. So it's like, you know, there's not going to be a hard end. But I think the biggest takeaway is audio storytelling is never going away. And the people who feel passionate, I'm spoiling the movie, the people who feel passionate about it are going to do it. And they're going to figure out a way to do it in a way that they can potentially do it as long as they can. And that's going to continue to be like, how many authors are out there, right? Right? We talk about books. You know, it's hard to sell a lot of books.
Yeah.
Most bestsellers are, it's only a few thousand, you know. That's why a lot of these authors can get their thing on the New York Times bestseller, because they go and they may have a company that buys 2,000 of the books, and that all, you know, that's a big jump. But if people stop making books, you know, it's like that people are like, are there too many podcasts? It's like, are there too many books in a library? Do people walk into a library like, man, there's way too many books in here? You know, it's like, and even independent films or any kind of these art forms, like they're, it's a very hard thing to do. And economically speaking, it doesn't always make sense to do it. But I also am a firm believer that you don't just do things, you know, for economic reasons. Like, that's a factor for sure, mm-hmm. but it shouldn't be the only reason. And the stuff made for only money purposes usually isn't very good. You know?
Yeah. Is there anything else that you want our audience to know about the documentary before we wrap up?
I mean, keep an eye out for it. Mm-hmm. You know, the AOA movie isn't just the website, but it's all our social stuff. So if you're interested, follow that. We're going to be, you know, there's stuff you can watch even right now, like some trailers and little clips and things. So if someone gets a taste of what we're doing, yeah, just, and if you tell other people about it, I think it's probably the biggest thing. You know, if you are someone who's listening to this and you go check out the movie and you're like, oh my gosh, Jenny would love to hear about this. She loves Ira Glass. I can't believe it. Does she know about this? Send Jenny a clip of it, or like, there's so many things to share at this point, because we did like a crowdfunding thing and there's tons of stuff to share. We had a TikTok as well. There's stuff on there. So if you got TikTokers, AOA movie. So if you go to AOA movie, anything, threads, I think we're on threads. Anyway, you know what I mean? It's the stuff, all the stuff.
All the stuff. All right. And yeah, we look forward to the documentary coming out and being able to watch it.
Me too.
So we wrap up the show with a segment I call The Last Chapter, where we talk about a library or bookish related question. So I thought I would ask you today, I thought since at least sometimes documentaries are searching for answers to big questions. Mm. So I thought I would ask you if you could answer any one mystery, like if you could have a higher being of some kind, the universe, the government, maybe whatever, give you the definitive correct answer to one mystery, what would you choose?
Oh my gosh. One mystery. Oh my gosh. This is a hard question. I'm trying, like, wow, that's a good question. Let's see. What would I want to know?
Can I tell you mine?
Yes, yes. Give me a hint here.
I want to know what dinosaurs really looked like.
That's a good one. See, you're good at this.
It's like Brontosaurus, the one with like the big long neck, right?
Right.
So like we assumed big long neck like a giraffe because we only had the bones. But what if they had more, was like more rounder?
Right.
Oh, like I think the example was like a penguin. Like if you look at a penguin skeleton, it looks like they have super long necks. But like they got a lot of like fat and and other soft tissue between that, so they're like these little round guys.
I want to know what they really sound like.
Oh, that's true.
I want to know what they really sound like. You may be curious because if we want to know how they look, we got to figure out how they sound.
That's true. Maybe they sounded more like birds than we know.
Yeah, but like they weren't like the Jurassic Park. Where
yeah.
It's like maybe they're like. Not as scary unless you saw one, and then you'd be like, well, that's a scary sound because I associate it with that thing.
Yeah.
Oh no, not the
it's a dinosaur. All right, well, thank you for joining me, and thank you everyone for listening. If you would like to reach out to the show to answer our last chapter question, or just to reach out, you can do that by emailing us at downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. You can also reach out to us via social media with the hashtag DowntimeCPL. If you're feeling generous, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, because it helps people find the show. Thank you again for listening. This has been another episode of Downtime.
Downtime is a project of the Cranston Public Library and is produced by Elena Rios, Robin Nizio, and me, Taylor Cardillo. Audio engineering by Dave Bartos. Our theme music is Day Trips by Ketza. And our ad music is Happy Ukulele by Scott Holmes. Links to the books and movies discussed can be found in the show notes. Remember to rate and review Downtime on Apple Podcasts, connect with the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the hashtag DowntimeCPL, and if there's something you'd like to hear on the show, send an email to downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the speaker's own and do not represent those of the Cranston Public Library. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. The Cranston Public Library name, in all forms and abbreviation, are the property of its owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. The content of this episode is the property of the Cranston Public Library and may not be reproduced without express written permission. Join us next week for more Downtime.
I don't want to take up dead air. Oh, gosh. You can edit.
Yes. It's the magic of podcasting.
Yes.